It's Saturday, June 27th, 2009, 10:06 a.m. in the Central Coast of California. Today on Geek Speak, Geek News, and the Geeks take your calls and comments.
Geek Speak is a production of KUSP, Central Coast Public Radio, kusp.org. The bandwidth for geekspeak.org is provided by GNI, gnihosting.com.
It's time now for Geek Speak. Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm your host, Miles Elam. Please keep in mind that the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP. Today on Geek Speak, we are doing geek news in the first half of the show. During the second half, I will welcome you to join our conversation. You can ask us anything. We may not have correct answers, but they will be answers. The numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Or go to geekspeak.org right now and send us an email. I'll give out that contact information again when we invite your participation in about a half an hour. This is Geek Speak. In the air room with me are Geeks Ben Jaffe, freelance media guy.
Hello.
Let's see if it's a mic thing. Alex Slea, security analyst.
Good morning.
Yeah, his mic works.
Hi, everyone. I'm not talking in my mic. I'm stealing Alex's.
And Lindsay Lonnie, senior technical support for Celion.
Good morning.
Let's start off with some news. Ben.
At the Intellectual Ventures Lab, they have built a device which uses electromagnetic forming to take these quarters, just normal quarters, and shrink them down to maybe about 60% their size in 30 microseconds. So what they do...
That's short.
That's a very, very short period of time. Well, actually, to put that in perspective, they got a camera that shoots at 100,000 frames per second, and it happened over the course of a couple frames, like 3 or 4 frames. And I actually lost my tab. Okay, so I'll talk about this later. But anyway, it's very cool. I'll put up the link on geekspeak.org and maybe... talk about it a little later in the show because I lost my anyway, I'm gonna give Alex's mic back.
Sounds good.
All right, so kind of going to another news story where I actually have some information on it.
We should hope it would be informative as opposed to, you know, just filling some time.
The Rough Trade
good,
Gaming...
Good to see you, Alex. He's our geek correspondent from Southern California up on a visit up for my birthday, as a matter of fact. Thank you very much.
Happy birthday, Miles.
Thank you.
Happy birthday, Miles.
Happy birthday.
So, the Rough Trade Gaming Community, they're a social kind of gaming group they're a gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgendered friendly group of gamers. And last weekend they actually held a gay pride parade in the World of Warcraft.
Nice.
Is that a first?
I don't know if it was the first year. I couldn't find any specifics about prior years, but I'm not sure if that was the first year, if they'd done it. It was the first time I certainly have heard of it. So, and they had their whole plot as to where their route was for the parade through the World of Warcraft.
World of Warcraft has had many different ceremonies take place. I believe people have gotten married on World of Warcraft before, and like, so this is exciting. It's invading our consciousness more and more.
Is that a legally observed marriage?
This is so awesome. I've never seen this before. I didn't see this news story.
Oh, they have video. Excellent.
Yeah, they've got a little YouTube video embedded in the page. What must that be like? Because normally in something like a gay pride parade or any kind of march or whatever, you've got all of your senses being stimulated, right? You've got even the smell of people next to you. You can see them, you can hear them, you can run into them, right? And you're actually moving. But when you're in a virtual environment like that, you're just seeing and pressing the numpad keys on your keyboard.
You're saying that this wouldn't be for you, Ben.
Maybe not. Well, for yeah.
Into the tactile.
Yes, I'm very much into the tactile.
Okay. And just note, it isn't actually the first one. They have a reference here to last year's parade, where the video is actually from last year's parade.
Okay. Lindsay, news story?
Sure. You mind if I steal the Google City Tours?
No, sorry.
So Google Labs has a new thing called City Tours. And basically you can go in and enter in an address or the name of a city, and it will instantly give you a tour that you can take, down to the minute, giving you major sites. It's definitely in labs mode, though. There's one where if you enter it in, it'll give you like 200-minute walks.
Lindsay, could you get your face a little bit closer to the mic?
Sure.
Or bring the mic closer to your face, actually, would be a better idea.
Can you hear me?
Yes. Okay. I can totally hear you before. It's just, yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Your voice is so wonderful. I just, you know, want to hear it more clearly.
Okay. Well, basically, like I said, it's still in the lab state, but it has a lot of potential. So if they enter in public transport in the future, you know, they'll be able to tell you what routes to take on the buses, I'm assuming. But should be really useful. They don't have outdoor events yet, I don't think. At least nothing that I saw. I put in Santa Cruz, and there are a few different things in there, but they didn't have anything like Henry Cowell or public parks. But okay. Should be fun.
Man, Google's just always in the news. I heard that now Google can actually see inside of SWF files, which are Flash files. So if you build a Flash website, before it would be entirely inaccessible to screen readers or even just to the Google spider crawling the web and searching it for indexing it for search. But now they can actually see some text inside of SWF files, which is really kind of interesting. I mean, you still
That seems like that's just an extension of Flash has put in a bunch of accessibility aspects into it.
Maybe it is. I don't actually know the details on that because I didn't prepare to talk about that. But it is pretty interesting, though, especially when you compare Flash websites to with HTML and CSS. And those are so accessible, and they're very indexable, and so they're very good from a search engine optimization point of view. But Flash is not... has historically been awful for that. So
yeah, we'll soon have to have a conversation about how far along the new HTML5 specs are and how that overlaps with Flash, like how much we need plugin or how much is just the browser and adoption rates. But that's for another show.
Very cool stuff, though.
One thing, I mean, with the whole Google Maps thing, Google Maps has been out there. A lot of people have come up with neat ideas on ways to use it. I mean, even on one of my own sites, I allow members to enter like their zip code and it plops a little point on the map so members kind of know where they are in relation to each other. But I mean, this one's kind of an obvious one, you know. Let's find all the locations in a particular area and say, hey people, these are places of interest and you might want to, you know, be able to take little tours and schedule times for it. So
Google Earth has kind of been doing that for a little while, where you can create, I don't know what they call them, sightseeing lists or something like that. Like when you open up Google Maps, there's usually a sample where you can click and it'll jump between different places, really interesting places in the world and different camera angles and everything. It's pretty cool stuff.
So Ben, you have another news story?
I do. I want to say one more thing about Google Maps is that if you haven't used it for public transit, it does that, and it does it so well, and I use it every week to get down to Geekspeak to talk to all you lovely
folks.
Yes,
I do it all the time on my iPhone.
Yeah, well, that's actually another good point. Not just the iPhone, but I mean all smartphones, all these sort of features where you use the map, it's like, I mean, like features you would have in a GPS, except now it's much more extendable and a lot of different people can provide services that are mobile.
Now that it has public transportation on it, it means that when you're on the go, when you're actually trying to catch the bus, you can know where you're going, where your transfer points are.
Or when the bus is late, too.
Yes.
Or when the train is late. Anyway, my news story. I'm stealing your mic again. My news story is about Twitter, which is completely fascinating social phenomenon to me. They actually just did a study. HubSpot just did a study on Twitter and found that 55.5% of Twitter users are not following anyone. So most...
That doesn't surprise me.
So
actually,
most Twitter users or more than half Twitter users are not getting any updates on their Twitter. 54.88%, which is almost the same number, have never sent a tweet. And 52.7% have no followers at all. So, and yet, you can they define an inactive Twitter user as someone who has all of the following: fewer than 10 followers, fewer than 10 friends, and fewer than 10 updates. And by that definition, only 9% of all Twitter users are inactive, according to this study, which seems to paint a different picture, or it seems to almost be like a slightly misleading picture from the other statistics, where over half of the people on Twitter are not following anyone, or, you know, another chunk of them, half of them, I've never tweeted and everything. So I don't know. It's kind of interesting to see this.
To me, it actually doesn't seem all that unusual, considering the fact that Think of all the guitar players in the world and all of them that actively play. How many of us actually know them? Can actually list them out? How many are playing for themselves and to empty crowds, you know, empty venues, or just, you know, on the beach and people are walking by and not paying attention? And then how many are playing to completely packed concert halls? Mm-hmm. I mean, I see this very much in the real world. That it shows up on Twitter doesn't seem all that unusual to me.
I don't know. Those numbers also look really high. I mean, if you think about how many people that really represents, I mean, most people are, that I think on there are probably more voyeuristic, where they want to follow other people, not necessarily advertise themselves.
Yeah, it's a majority. The majority of the content on Twitter is made by a couple percent of the people who use Twitter or who have Twitter accounts, excuse me. Similarly on Wikipedia, I think it's what, 4% or something like that? I had that number somewhere. But yeah, with Wikipedia, here it is. Wikipedia participation is about 4.5% of visitors adding or editing Wikipedia entries. Now that statistic is from 2007, but it still kind of paints that same general picture. Same with YouTube, same with Flickr, all of these networking sites. People all want to have accounts, but not very many people actually create either media or content. So yeah, I don't know. I found this other thing, but I can't remember it. What's with me and not being able to remember things?
Well, you're getting old.
So. I know.
Welcome.
Now, speaking of media, actually, I had a quick story I wanted to go off. ASCAP, which is the American Society of Composers, Authors, and Publishers, by the way, to give some context, these are the same folks who went after the Girl Scouts because they were singing songs at a campfire and they wanted to get royalties for it. So it appears that what they're going for at this point is those ringtones that people have on their phones. I'm actually for people getting, you know, dissuaded from having many of those ringtones. I'm sitting there and they're hugely loud and music that, I don't know, does anyone really want to admit to listening to some of these songs? But
I don't.
But the ASCAP is trying to get people to have to pay royalties every single time their phone rings. Every time that ringtone is played, because it's a public performance. Now, I mean, you're hearing
only
the disdain.
When it's on speakerphone?
I love that silence there as we just sit there. We sit here stunned that you.
Right.
A public performance when your phone rings?
Yes.
Wait, but you're not even starting that public performance. You can call me and then get me in trouble because you're making my phone have a public performance and I own it. Or
but
do they
like,
sue you?
But that's like saying you put up a tape recorder, you know, or something like that in some music player in a bus and you're waiting for someone else to press play.
Yeah, but how many people press play on random music players? I mean,
so really, isn't it the person who's calling that is initiating the performance?
But that doesn't matter so much as the fact that they want the royalty payments for it.
It's a joint performance.
Now, there is that disdain in my voice, and I should be more objective about it and just put out the facts for it and let you guys do the commentary. But it's at the same time, it's still – it just strikes me as
– abysmal?
Yeah. Like what price do you put on culture? Because this is culture, as annoying as I have said that I've found it many times, it's still culture. Like, how much are you talking about rewarding someone for their cost? Because people do pay for their ringtones to download them in the first place. Mm-hmm. So,
but you pay once, and then you can have your phone ring all you want, right?
Right, a 7-second segment. It's not like it's a full performance. It's just enough to annoy the person next to them.
I don't know about 7 seconds, good 20 or 30 seconds.
Well, it depends on how packed their purse is. You know, they're digging through their purse.
That is true. So should people who fumble a little bit more before they get to the phone pay more than the person who answers within the first three notes?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Right then, moving on. Alex, your next story.
All right. Well, I guess kind of building off on the Twitter thing here, I wanted to kind of touch on a little story about sports in a way. Not that I'm a huge sports follower, but I recently read that Shaq had been traded to the Arizona Suns. Yeah. And he found out on Twitter. It wasn't like he wasn't communicated to about it, you know, in advance or given a phone call. He basically found out online.
Wow. That's
messed up is what that is.
Well, I mean, on the bright side, he's still getting paid millions of dollars.
Sure.
So, I mean, it's still a sight better than getting fired over Twitter, for example, or something like that. But
I don't know. I'm not sure what the feeling is about being traded. You know, it's kind of the way you did get fired.
Right. Well, not necessarily. It's an economic decision.
Well, he has to move and all of that. I mean,
yeah.
I think they give him some warning.
Text you that you're moving to Arizona. Have fun, Miles.
No, text everyone else that you're moving to Arizona first.
Okay.
The question, though, is, am I getting paid millions of dollars to move to Arizona? It's because, you know, that does change the equation for me somewhat.
Yeah, but if you had a family and all that stuff, it's a big change for your family.
$1 million.
Millions of dollars.
All right.
You could commute with a helicopter.
He could have his house moved there.
Via helicopter.
Yes.
Right then. Moving on. Lindsay.
All right, so this is more space-related. Basically, NASA's Cassini probe was collecting data from the ice from the rings around Saturn, and they found that about 6% of some of the grains they collected were rich in sodium salt, and this made them explore why and where it came from. And basically, the sixth largest moon around Saturn, Enceladus, or Enchiladas, as I call it,
well, it looks like that. Yeah,
exactly. Helps me remember. Has what they call tiger stripes at one of the poles, where it's just fissures in the crust, and it's spouting these gases and helping the rings form around Saturn. And they found that this is where the salt is coming from. So they're thinking there may be a salty ocean underneath the crust there, or that it might be caverns filled with salt water. And
which
so,
are good indicators of?
Life. So they're thinking it may be a precursor to life, or they're going to send another mission out in November to do a couple more flybys and see if they can collect more data.
Is it going to be focusing on the moon specifically, or the stuff they're finding in the rings?
They just said that they're flybys, so I don't know if there's other stuff that that Cassini's going to be doing at that same time, but they're also going to do two flybys of the moon.
Okay.
Cassini is really cool because it's... It's over at Saturn, and it's taking pictures of Saturn.
Yes. That's kind of the point.
Well,
of
okay. I guess I just really wanted to say the word Iapetus this morning, and so I just have to say that Iapetus is shaped like a walnut. And there's a really
Iapetus
cool...
Iapetus
being one of the moons of Saturn.
Okay.
And, yeah, it's shaped like a walnut, and that's really cool. That's all I have to say.
You wanted to say Iapetus earlier this morning just for the heck of it?
No, that came up when she said Cassini. She said Cassini. I'm like, oh, God, I have to say Iapetus.
Okay.
So never mind.
It's just been lingering on your mind all morning, well, and she finally gave you the opportunity.
Oh, God, I need to talk about it shaped like a walnut. I mean, that's, like, a great reason for a moon to be your favorite, you know?
How often do you really get to say Iapetus, you know? You got
to
take advantage.
I try to incorporate it into every conversation that I have.
Okay, so moving on. I'm going to inject my own little news story here as well, just because, you know, if I don't bring up the political news, then no one will.
That's true.
Thanks, Miles.
What we are seeing with the Obama administration are issues of transparency. It's something that's been in the news lately, following on from the Bush administration. Well, one of the things that the CIO, the new CIO of the U.S., the Chief Information Officer of the United States, is working for is all those studies that the government does, a vast amount of data. Most of the time it's given to government organizations to sift through and try to figure out what they want to do with it, or what conclusions they can draw from, or what policy decisions will be made from it. What the CIO is planning on doing is placing that information up on the web for everyone to access, just a huge data mine. And so then private companies would then go up, look at that information, all of these studies that the government has contracted that basically our tax dollars have paid for, and seeing what they do with the information and having it seed the market. Very exciting thing. So they're going to be setting up data.gov.
That makes a lot of sense. I mean, you've
got... Yeah, it makes a huge amount of sense.
You've got all this information that the government's been collecting that we've been paying for, and I think that... I don't know. I being a database guy, you know, my background, my career, and just generally liking taking a bunch of data and querying it, finding out, you know, cool trends or what, you know, what's the trends on, I don't know, whatever it is I'm looking at. But I don't know, I think that's kind of cool. I'd love to have access to that database and give me a SQL interface and I'm good to go.
Don't know if it'll be a SQL interface. It may just end up being a straight text data file, just raw data entry like CSV.
It's called Export into MySQL.
All right. At any rate, GeekSpeak on KUSP is supported by Complete Mailing Service, located at Harvey West Business Park. Complete Mailing Service, pushing the envelope for Santa Cruz County since 1976. Complete Mailing Service at 425-5556. GeekSpeak on KUSP is supported by Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer and electronic parts, as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 SoCal Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP. I'm your host, Miles Elam, with Geeks Ben Jaffe, Alex Leas, and Lindsay Lonnie. We can take your calls. Phone lines are open on any conversation you want to have. We can take calls on Linux, OS X. You could probably field something on Windows. I'm not quite sure. Programming, security, media. The numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. So who are we on now for news? Ben.
Oh, I didn't know if you were going to prompt me for a specific one. I have like three of them, so I'm just going to choose a random one. So Wikipedia has it's been announced that Wikipedia will be adding a video option for the articles on that website within the next 2 or 3 months. And this will be interesting. There will be a new button that says add media, and you can click on it, and it's not like a YouTube thing where you can just upload whatever you want, because that would just make Wikipedia probably a slum of the internet, much like YouTube. No, that's I shouldn't say that. But in any case, you will be able to search for video from a couple repositories that'll have some copyright-free material, and then you can choose different sections of those videos to put on the article and the page.
I have to admit, I gotta tell you, this YouTube is the slum of the internet.
Parts.
Okay, if you don't want to elaborate.
Well,
that's fine.
I'll elaborate. The things that float to the top, some of them are good, some of them are okay. Not too many of them are bad, but if you were to just, I don't know, click on a random video, if you were to just type in a random extra tag at the end of a YouTube video or something like that, and it would just take you to a random one, you probably wouldn't get something very interesting. But that was definitely a contentious statement, which I will retract and maybe make later if I deem it necessary.
Okay. Well, line one, we have Chris from Santa Cruz. Hello, Chris.
Well, good morning.
Good morning. You're getting a brand new computer. Tell us about it.
I have a brand new computer, and it has Vista 64-bit on it. And it's only about 3 weeks old and providing endless source of amusement, but mostly terror and fear, and it's just not working. So right now I'm getting, it does not boot up. I have made my recovery disks, and I put those into the computer, and it does not see the recovery disk, so it can't do a system repair. I can't push F2, F8, or F10 and get any results. I'm basically just looking at something that says error boot configuration data and a bunch of numbers. Any advice?
Time for a new computer?
Well, it is a new computer.
It's a brand new, super deluxe, extra wonderful gamers.
Well, they only last about 3 weeks now. I replace my computer every two.
So here's a question. Where did you buy it from?
Best Buy.
Okay, because
I thought I'd talk to you guys first because it's so much more fun.
Yeah. That's seeming fairly catastrophic. Now, my first impression would be to say save any day that you can off it, except it's not booting.
Have you used the computer before, or has it always been like this?
Oh, yes, merrily. It doesn't operate most of the functions that my normal XP would do, you know, like QuickBooks and things like that, and Outlook, all the reasons why I bought it. But, yeah, I've been having a great time just surfing the web because I'm really good at that.
Well, I guess my question is, do you have any data on this machine that you would want to take off?
I could reconstruct it. It's not critical life. But I do have data on there that I would prefer to keep, but I'm willing to lose it.
Right. The advice that I would want to give would be reinstall the operating system and try again, seeing that something hadn't gone wrong, making sure you had updates. But the fact that it's failed so quickly makes me think you may be looking at some hardware issue that you want to take it back to Best Buy.
Especially if F2, F8, F10 don't get you anywhere. Are those all Windows? Oh, wait. Have you tried pressing delete again? Can you get into the BIOS? Do you know?
I can't. Well, my only option was that I knew about was F2, F8, F10. Mm. So
some of them it's escape. Some of them it's F1. Yeah, it's
delete.
Far from standardized.
It usually advertises it like when it first starts booting up what the key sequence is to get into the BIOS.
Unless it's covering
in
up the BIOS.
In the lower right-hand corner, when it is booting up, it does say, give me the option of F2 and F10. Neither of those have ever worked.
Yeah, I'd say take the system back. If something so basic is going, even if it comes down to being a stuck key on a keyboard, it's still, yeah.
Yeah, I'd agree. I mean, if you're pressing F2 right when it says to, and you're not getting into the BIOS, something's messed up. It's possible. I mean, like Miles says, stuck key. It could be that your input is your keyboard's just not feeding the signal properly to the machine. It's kind of hard to say, but. That's like basic.
But it's not the only thing that's wrong with the system, which makes me think you have a real hardware issue that you need to have taken care of back at the store you bought it from.
Some systems, you can tap F11 while it's booting up to get into the BIOS, but I don't know if it's going to work for that
one. So what I usually do is when I boot up the computer, I just hit my hand on the keyboard all over it, and then inevitably, after a couple tries, I hit whatever the magic key is for that computer.
The magic key. Well, as I was waiting for you guys to answer the phone, I was in the process of going back and using the keyboard that came with the machine. I had some other deluxe keyboard.
Okay, so it's not the not the keyboard that's part of the problem.
I don't know. I was just going to rule that out, put back the keyboard that came with the unit, and see if that would be the magical ingredient that it needed, and that it couldn't recognize F2 or F8 because of my super deluxe tarantula keyboard.
That's true, but even if the keyboard, say, wasn't plugged in or just didn't work, then you still should have a booting machine, and it would boot up and say, you don't have a keyboard, welcome to Vista.
Well, not if it had some broken keys on it, but still that wouldn't explain why your system is completely having problems. So I hope you have some luck in the future with it, Chris. Sorry we couldn't be more help over the phone.
I think you gave me the information I kind of was dreading but knew anyway.
All right.
And I appreciate it.
Yeah, take care. Thanks for your call.
Bye.
Bye.
Yeah, usually hardware failures are like 3 or 4 or 5 years out or right when you buy it, especially with hard drives.
Right. And Rich from SoCal.
Hi. One of you mentioned databases, and so I would love to make a plot of total CPU cycles available per year for the last 50 years. Does anybody have a clue if such data would be available somewhere?
The total CPU power of the planet, you mean?
Yeah.
Wow. That's a
magnificent one.
And are you talking about used CPU power or potential CPU power?
I think if I could get the number of computers and sort of their cycle times, I could multiply them out and integrate it up.
Yeah, that's a huge number.
Well, it didn't used to be a huge number.
Well, it actually was always a huge number. It's just now larger than most human minds can grasp altogether. I mean, computers were already doing things so much faster than human beings 50 years ago.
Well, I'm not worried about human beings. I just like to be able to make a statement like, your cell phone has more computer power than existed in the world in 1957 or something like that.
Oh, relative items like that. Okay.
I could have
sworn I've seen, I've seen stuff like that before, but I don't know a specific place where I've done it. Like, I've looked at, because it's always so hard, too, when looking at a cell phone and saying, yeah, my iPhone is a 400 megahertz ARM system, but that doesn't necessarily translate to what a 400 megahertz Pentium 2 was.
That's right, but still, just vaguely, it would be. I think it would be an interesting curve to look at.
Yeah. If you come across it, by all means, let us know. Shoot us an email. We'd love to see it. We'll share it on air and share the link with folks.
Okay.
You may be able to look at censuses, is that the plural? I don't know, Miles.
Censuses,
yeah.
Okay, I'll keep trying.
Thanks.
All right.
Thank you.
Take care. Actually, now that you mention it, census, or is it just census? Is it every census? No, that's
I think I'm going to look it up.
Miles. Yeah, go ahead. I'm really curious about
that. Do you
want to
make a
that.
Prediction?
No, I'm going to...
Here,
I'm gonna,
play this game at
I
home.
Guess I already have made a prediction.
If you're listening at your home or in your car over the live feed, try to guess what it is without looking it up and see if you're right.
And we still have some time available for your calls. Excuse me. The numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877.
Okay, I have an answer for you guys.
Already?
It's censuses.
Oh, I was right the first time.
Yes.
Well, I should have stuck with my guns, huh? All right. So, Alex, got a new story for us?
Sure. I guess there's a company called XP Vehicles that's been working on an energy-efficient vehicle for, I guess, about 12 years now. It's inflatable. Basically, they're working on a four-person car, and... to cut down on parts, they're actually looking at having like an inflatable body. It gets, I think it was like 125 miles per charge, which is reasonable. I mean, it's not quite to the Tesla, but it is able to carry four people, so it's not too bad. Fully electric car.
What material is this made out of?
You know, that's a dang good question.
I imagine, you know, those pool toys that you blow up, and they're these shiny plastic... and you could see the seam along the bumper.
Somehow I don't see that passing any crash tests anytime soon.
I'm not really sure. I mean, it wouldn't be as heavy, it wouldn't exactly have the momentum.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like an airbag all in itself.
But not having momentum is not necessarily a good thing.
True. You'd just kind of be bounced off.
stopping very quickly as opposed to stopping more slowly as the car crunches to a halt is... Yeah. Not necessarily the best thing you want to have.
Well, maybe
if something else hits you.
So, what do you call the airbag then? If the whole car is basically a big airbag.
Well, the whole car isn't an airbag. It's more of I would think of a spring or something like that as it crumples down, or aluminum can. You know, the airbag is still slowing your face. You know, the velocity of your head as it approaches the column and the windshield. So, but yeah.
What if you just had a car that would jump over any potential thing you could crash into? Unless it was like a building or something.
It depends on how quickly it was jumping up.
I saw a car that had an active suspension system where you would ride in it and you wouldn't feel any bumps because it would actually compensate. It would look ahead with cameras and map out the height, everything of the road. And then it would actively compensate for these things. And also, there was this video that they were demonstrating. They also have it where if there's a big bump in the road that's just too big, the car would actually gear up and jump over the bump. Like the suspension system will actually lift the car out off the ground, and it'll jump over this thing.
Why do I get a vision of like cartoon character cars where the wheels just come shooting out of the bottom?
I was thinking of all those auto shows where they had hydraulics. Like, that's now hitting the mainstream, I guess.
So, but I mean, to kind of just quickly touch back on this one inflatable car, I mean, the main goal is really to cut down a lot on cost and fuel. It's a lot lighter. And, I mean, it's because there's not all the parts that are necessary for, that a metal car would need. It cuts down on costs significantly for that. So it'd be interesting to see. I mean, even if there are concerns about crash tests and all that, if they can find ways to kind of accommodate and deal with that, it's part of this is to try and find more fuel efficient vehicles and just an effort for that. So I think that's a good thing.
Yeah, and if memory serves, if it doesn't go above a certain speed or a certain rated speed, it doesn't have to go through the full crash regimen that most cars on the road do.
Well, this one says 85 miles per hour.
Well, that would be above that threshold. So, on that note, okay, actually not on that note, we're going to take calls. So, Stuart from Santa Cruz. Hello, Stuart.
Hey, how you doing?
Doing so, well.
What's your question?
I have a really old AMD machine.
Okay, how old are you talking in terms
it's
of
like AMD? 5, 6 years old.
Okay.
And it keeps crashing. And I know I need more memory, and I'm wondering, it tells me that, I'm running out of random access,
Okay.
And then I go and I try to erase stuff. And
you're on Windows XP?
Yeah.
And how much RAM do you have right now?
That's a good question. How do I find that out?
Do you have your computer in front of you right now?
Yeah.
If you go to the start menu.
Okay.
And, okay, I guess it depends on how it looks. Does it look like the Windows 98 menu or does it look like the XP menu?
The XP menu.
Okay. Is there a My Computer?
Yeah.
Okay. Right-click on that. Click the right mouse button on that.
Okay.
And choose Properties.
Properties. Okay. So I get System Properties, Computer Name, System Restore.
And it's basically taking a tally of your system right now. Should be in the general tab, and it'll say how much RAM you have.
Okay.
But
1.54 gigahertz, 400 megabytes of RAM.
Okay, 400 megabytes of RAM.
80 megabytes.
Well, okay.
So it's not that much.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like much. I do wonder. A computer that old, what would that be? Would that be DDR1?
Well, the way I always think of it, though, is that if you had a computer that was working fine a couple months ago and now it's crashing and it's having memory, it seems to be having memory issues and Windows is freezing, then it may not actually be your setup with RAM unless you've changed the way you use the computer.
Well, you add more software and it's going to, XP will get slower.
That's true, but only if the software is running.
No, that's actually not true.
Oh, really?
Yeah. XP will end up with more resident stuff. I mean, you'll have programs that are running resident.
Over time.
So is it worth it? Is it worth it to add more memory to this machine?
It can. Adding more RAM can almost always give more life to a system.
Uh-huh.
The question is, how much money do you want to spend paying for that RAM? Because the RAM for a 5 or 6 year old computer is going to be more expensive than the RAM for a computer like 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. The older it gets, the more scarce it gets, and therefore the cost goes up. But it's almost always going to be cheaper than a whole new computer. So the question is, how much money do you want to put into the old computer as opposed to saving up for a new one?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, also, you were saying it just kind of occasionally crashes, right?
Yeah, it just freezes up.
See, that makes me think. I mean, there's something else that might be going on. It's not just a matter of having more RAM, because that would just be slow.
I got this one message about having more than one antivirus
it's very
going
possible.
At the same time.
It's very possible that you either have a virus or have two virus checkers installed, or you have malware. And so to solve what's probably happening, this is just my opinion, is that you have malware and then you can download a program to get rid of this malware, and it's completely harmless to try it out. There's no there's no harm in trying it. And the program that I usually use is called Spybot Search and Destroy. So if you go and download that program and you run it on your computer, then it'll search your computer for all of the malware it can find. And if it finds some malware, it's very possible that that's what is actually slowing down your computer and hogging up resources.
Yeah, but the crashes, though, I do have to disagree with you, Alex. I think just my experience with Windows, if Windows runs out of memory, things get unstable.
Well, they get unstable, but they usually just... Like Windows, you just end up getting the hourglass, spinning. You don't usually get a complete crash of a system. So, I mean, that's usually a hardware problem. I mean, Windows is, as much as, I'll bash on Windows occasionally, it is stable enough that it you know, running out of memory doesn't usually cause it to completely die.
You and I have had different experiences. another quick question I have you been updating your Windows XP installation? Have you been doing Windows Update on a regular basis? Okay.
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay. Just checking that one out. Yeah.
So I think probably the first thing you'd want to try is looking for malware with SpyBot Search and Destroy. And then if you continue to have problems, you can always follow up with us on our forums online at geekspeak.org. And you can
Go to the forums. Okay, I'll check that out.
All right. Thanks. Thank you for your call.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Yeah, once again, you know, you can ask us questions. We'll give answers. They may not be correct, but we'll give answers. Once again, the numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Lindsay, do you have a news story you want to share?
Sure. Basically, this is a Nokia Labs thing that's going on. They're working with some technology that is kind of an idea similar to what Tesla was exploring 100 years ago on a tiny scale.
Nokia Labs is the cell phone manufacturer?
Exactly. Okay. Basically, it's the holy grail dream of no cables for charging and powering phones. But what this does is the phone would pick up ambient wireless power from TV, radio, other mobile phone systems, just enough to keep it alive and charge it while it's in your pocket. It's not enough while you're on a live call or anything like that. And, of course, it's in the early stages of experiment. But that would be really great if they can get that working.
So just the radio waves around
ambient,
us at all times.
Exactly.
Wow.
Ambient
that's
radio waves.
No, that's what I call a trickle charge. that's not much energy.
Yeah. Currently, they can harvest all of 5 milliwatts from the air, but they're working on trying to increase that to 20 milliwatts in the short term and 50 milliwatts down the line.
Considering the fact that, well, I don't know. Aren't most modern smartphones, like the Tegra chip from NVIDIA, things like that, aiming for about 100 milliwatts at idle? So it would slow down the discharge, but it doesn't seem like it could reverse it, at least not yet.
True, but I mean, even still, if you can slow it down to where you're charging it at 50 milliwatts, you're basically doubling the battery life of a phone just by adding power as you're in the
right, but you were saying 5 milliwatts, right?
That's just what they're at the lab right now.
Yeah, but they said they're going to get 50
soon. They're looking at
50. Oh, okay.
They're saying that they're hoping to commercialize it in 3 to 5 years, but we'll see.
Okay. And who do I give the next news to, Ben, or do I take it for myself? Power. So I'll just do a quick story, which is a curious thing is that Blu-ray. Okay, first off, some history. Blu-ray, backed by Sony, beat out the competing technology HD DVD. However, it looks like even today, more than a year after the win, Blu-ray adoption is still very sluggish. It's just not getting the uptake. And in fact, quite a few people still have HD DVD players. And so people are saying that maybe because of the slowed economy, people are still getting DVDs as opposed to Blu-ray discs because Blu-ray discs cost so much more. But the curious thing is that this is not correlating to the HD TV market. People have high-definition TVs, and they're buying them. But they're not getting a Blu-ray player to go along with it. I'm wondering if it has to do with online sales. And that's one of the conjectures that's showing up on this news story.
Yeah. Well, my opinion of that is that as streaming gets cheaper and as pay for subscription and streaming, things like Netflix or what's the other one that uses – well, anyway, things like Netflix – as those get cheaper, I feel like we're going to be getting HD movies over the internet much more than we're going to actually be buying the DVDs. I feel like I wouldn't say like this year or next year, the year after, but maybe within the next 5 or 10 years, I feel like the physical media is kind of on its way.
Yeah, I get Netflix, but the discs that I have from Netflix are the ones that I couldn't do from Watch Instantly.
Well, that's true, but as they add to that library and as they have all of those available, I mean.
So it's already happening.
Yeah, and Hulu and I don't know.
Okay, Ben, so do you want to take the next story?
Can I cover a goofy USB device because Al isn't here, even though that goes at the end?
Sure.
Okay, I just wanted to mention that I just found a USB toothbrush.
Really?
Yes.
So in other words, encouraging you to have
good hygiene on the go.
No, I was actually thinking about an electronic device nearby water and then placing it in your mouth. am I the only one here that gets a little nervous with that combination?
It's only USB.
Last time I was on and Al wasn't, I covered a USB humidifier, very similar. Just put a bunch of humid air into your computer.
Well, you can at least section that off. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, you're putting this in your mouth, and I mean, we've all, with brushing our teeth, you know where sometimes the liquid does not stay right at the head of the brush. It kind of
dribbles down. And,
speak for yourself.
And then it zaps yourself. It zaps yourself. It zaps you. Okay, news story.
So what's the point of it? It's an electric toothbrush, so it has like the
electric
vibrating
toothbrush. Yeah, it's got the little round rotating bristle head thing, and you plug it in via USB.
Okay.
Well, I don't know. I mean, you could say, though, wouldn't you, couldn't you argue that all USB toothbrushes are dangerous, just as dangerous as this one?
I was unaware that there were USB toothbrushes.
Okay.
You will forgive
me. You're just
me
taken
for
completely aback.
Yes.
It's the computer near water that makes me feel weird. But the other thing I was going to mention is that NASA is going to, for the shuttle replacement, has decided to stick to imperial units instead of converting to the international system, to metric. They're going to stay with...
For all of the old stuff that's been made.
Not for
new things.
For a shuttle replacement and the development of the Constellation program.
Right. But,
which is the program that's going to replace the shuttle.
Yeah. I could have sworn it was all the stuff they had done previously. If it had been done in Imperial, they weren't going to take the time to convert it.
No. They're not going to build the new shuttle using international. They're going to use it using Imperial, which is feet, inches versus centimeters, meters,
that's
kilometers.
Disheartening.
Yeah, it's really sad. It turns out they figured out that it would take about $370 million to do it, to update all of the documentation and everything.
Once again, dragging our feet with regard to moving to the metric system.
And $370 million is almost half of the cost of a shuttle launch nowadays. So it's a lot of money. It's a pretty decent amount of money, but I mean, it's kind of important. I mean, we've already had some losses confusion between international and imperial.
Right. I can see that's a complicated issue, but I can solely see the argument for the shuttle. The shuttle is going to be replaced soon. They want to keep costs as low as possible because it's already going to be any money they put into it is going to be lost.
They're launching just until 2010. That's
right. Assuming that the doorknob, they can remove it from the shuttle.
We'll talk about that in just a moment. But
no, go ahead and talk about it now.
Oh, okay, yeah. So the thing that Miles was just mentioned was there is a knob from a crew work lamp which found its way in zero gravity when it was orbiting the Earth, found its way wedged in between
a metal knob.
A metal knob in between what was it, the. I've lost that too. Between one of the windows and another pane. And then the space shuttle came back to Earth. And what happens is when the space shuttle is up in space, it expands slightly because it's not under gravity.
Well, because there's pressure inside and very low pressure outside.
That's true. Atmospheric pressure. And so now that it's on the Earth and the space shuttle has contracted a little bit, they can't get the knob out. And it's caused damage.
Right. It's cracked the window that's there.
It has. And that's kind of a big deal when you're going into space. And so they can't get it. They can't get the knob back out from in between the panes. And so if they were to actually disassemble that section, it would be on the order of like between 6 months and a year and a half or something like that. Their estimates were high, but historically, I guess their estimates are high. But
and the question is, how do you put the entire shuttle into a low atmosphere environment? It's really big. And is it possible to put the inside of the shuttle at a very high pressure environment? But will that cause other problems?
Definitely. And so the
because you'd have to go up to, far above
the
1,000 millibars.
Yeah, exactly. And the attempts that they've already been making to remove this knob they've applied dry ice to it to try to get the knob to shrink, but that hasn't been quite successful. So I don't know. It's not good news, which means that Atlantis, this is on the space shuttle Atlantis, and that means that Atlantis might not be going up anymore ever, conceivably.
Which means that the shuttle missions may be ending sooner than we thought.
Yes.
Which is a shame.
Definitely. So hopefully there will be further developments in this story, and they'll be able to get that the knob. It's a shoe mount knob.
Right. Thank you for that story. The geeks today were Ben Jaffe, Alex Leas, and Lindsay Lonnie. And if you want to take on the keep the conversation going, you can go to the forums on geekspeak.org online.
Hey, Miles, just really quick, if you have a moment to say.
We have a moment.
One quick thing. Lindsay has a little article pulled up. I think at least just throwing out the title might be fun and tying in some of the space talk.
Go for it.
Well, I have to admit, I love Telegraph UK site because the headlines are so great. NASA prepares to bomb the moon is the article. And basically, they're just looking for water in craters on the moon, but... they're going to shoot a missile into the surface of the moon to see if they can detect some water coming out. But I just love the headline. NASA prepares to bomb the moon.
This is Central Coast Public Radio, Santa Cruz, and KBDH San Ardo, streaming live and podcasting at KOSP.org. And GeekSpeak is a registered service mark of Online Tonight with David Lawrence and is used with permission.